This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 75. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network. I am your host, Riley Bowman. And today I've got with me, guess who?
Jacob Paulson.
You say that like you love your own name so much, Jacob.
I just don't think it's that special.
Jacob Paulson.
So I did have someone show up at my last class and said, "Are you Jacob?" "Yes." "Jacob Paulson?" "Yes." "D. Jacob Paulson?" "Maybe." "The Jacob Paulson from the Concealed Carry Podcast?" "Yes." "Oh, wow." And I was like, "Oh, okay, well, we have listeners."
And we are completely normal people. Well, okay. That might be a stretch. Especially
normal's
for you.
Yeah, I'm anything but normal.
And chances are that student of yours is listening right now.
Yeah,
so,
I suppose
hello.
So.
I don't know what his name is, but hello to you, sir.
I don't remember.
Yeah, anyway, cool. Today's our usual Monday news episode. Today we got all kinds of crazy stories, stories about Levi jeans. I know some of you are expecting to hear about that. Just how much of an impact women are having in our industry. Several really great justified stories, as always and usual. So we look forward to getting into all that with you. And also, this one really caught my eye, Jacob, and it has to deal with constitutional carry in Utah. And I think some of our listeners will be surprised to hear, you know, what came out of that story as well. Mm-hmm. I know it was a huge surprise to me as well. I saw it and I was like, what? I'm totally flabbergasted. Anyway, So, today's episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast is brought to you by the Mantis X training tool. More on that later. And so, without any further ado, we do have a training tip, as is customary on our Monday episodes. And today's training tip has to do with full 360-degree engagement of targets. And so, you know, the last couple of Monday episodes where we've had our training tips, they kind of kept building on each other. And so, we're kind of to that point now here where we've talked about, turning and addressing other targets or other threats, so basically turning and shooting and some techniques and as to how to do that. And so this one is really kind of an extension of that, thinking about if you've got, for whatever reason, threats in 360 degrees. You got one in front of you, you got one to your left, to your right, maybe directly behind you. And so, you know, there's not a whole lot I can say as to, you know, use the techniques we've talked about in past training tips as to how to do that properly. And one other thing I'll say too, before I go into kind of the gist of this one today is, whatever you do, whenever you are turning or moving to address a target in a different direction, don't get tripped up. Like, don't trip over your own feet. That is probably the biggest issue here, or the biggest risk to you, is that you might cross your feet or something as you're trying to turn. Don't do that. Don't ever cross your feet. That is probably like the, you know, when we talk about shooting and moving or turning and shooting, that's like the number one rule is like, don't ever cross your feet. And so, you know, let's imagine you got a target in front of you and a target behind you, and, you know, you got to get turned around 180 degrees to get that one behind you. You don't want to cross your feet over ever. And so, but one thing you do want to do is you want to turn and look at that target first, like we talked about, you know, a couple weeks ago. And then you want to actually kind of step sort of to one side and slightly in front of you, and then do another step with your other foot that begins turning you around. And then when you get turned around, then you bring your other foot kind of back to even. So it's kind of like a three-step turn. And so you're doing that in such a way that you're not ever crossing up your feet. So anyway, I wanted to make sure that was clear. So what I'm going to suggest, though, is really more like a drill. And so what I want you to do is basically go into a room, like a bedroom would be ideal for this because it's about the right size, and put like a post-it note or a 3x5 card and put one on each wall of your four walls in that room. Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and then just simply practice transitioning from, and I would suggest you mix it up. So like shoot the one directly in front of you, then go to your left, and then go back to the one in front of you, and then go to the right, and then back to the one in front of you, and then go to the one behind you, and then maybe, you know, and then just kind of start doing randomly, like, you know, go to the one in front, then the one behind, and then to the one side, and then maybe completely 180 degrees again. Just practice all these different maneuvers going from target to target to target to target, so from wall to wall to wall to wall. And you might even mix it up by turning 45 degrees to where you've got targets now that are kind of 45 degrees offset from you, and practice transitioning and moving in between those that way as well. So that's all I've got for the, you know, training tip today. I think it's just a really great drill because it really brings all of these skills into one little drill where you're just and this is perfect, of course, to do with a cert or other safe, you know, dry fire practice method, because this is a drill that you can't really do at the range. There's very few ranges where you can actually shoot 360 degrees.
Yeah.
Very few. You know, use your cert pistol or whatever and do this drill. It's a great drill. You know, occasionally I try to work through this myself, and I always find myself, you know, I discover deficiencies in my own skills every time I do this very simple one drill. Jacob, thoughts on full 360 degree engagement?
No, I think it's really good. Definitely one of those things that you do slowly at first, and you pick up speed over time, and you just really focus on those fundamentals.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, other than the don't getting tripped up over your feet, just always make sure that you always look at the target you're going to go to next, and then make your turn and bring the gun and the sights over to it, which is one reason why we, you know, talk about how important natural point of aim is. So anyway, let's get now into our first news story. And this is the one that I was talking about just a second ago that really caught me off guard, and has to do with constitutional carry in Utah. And I think we did share a story about how one, although we share so many stories from so many different states that sometimes you get, you know, confused, but I remember we mentioned that somebody was going to push for constitutional carry in Utah. And so that is something that's been introduced or is being planned to introduce. And that's Representative Lee Perry of Box Elder County in Utah. He says he wants to introduce a bill he calls common sense carry. I like that, by the way. I think that's a really smart term, you know, other than even constitutional carry, just common sense carry. It's a really clever term. Was that his term, or I guess that's what that's what he calls it.
Sure. I don't know if he invented the term. I mean, this legislation's been submitted to the state like 4 years in a row.
Yeah. So anyway, I love that term. Like I swear I'm going to adopt that term now. Anyway. So, you know, his goal is for Utahns to be able to carry concealed even without a permit. Now, Utah is so popular in the concealed carry permit world because they issue tons of permits, and especially to non-residents. In fact, in this article on our website, carryutah.com, it talks about how only 40% of Utah permits are actually Utahns. That surprised me too.
Yeah, that's actually higher than I would have guessed, frankly. And those numbers have always been true. I remember I got my Utah permit in 2004, and I started teaching Utah classes in 2007, and that ratio has always been about steady. So of the, you know, 500,000 people who have a concealed carry permit in Utah, 40% of them are Utahns. That's roughly what, 200,000?
Yeah, that would be exactly 200,000.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that was the one thing that surprised me, but the bigger thing that surprised me was the support, or should I say lack of support, amongst Utahns for this bill or a bill like this. So it says here, according to a recent poll, there's a link here, it takes us to utahpolicy.com. So this poll recently found that really 75% of Utahns believe a permit should be required for concealed carrying. So only 25% would, you know, according to this poll, in theory, support this common sense carry bill.
Yeah. Now this is interesting. This poll was performed or executed from October 12th to October 20th. And they surveyed 818 adults, and the survey has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.43%. So statistically, that would suggest it's pretty valid. Nothing's ever perfect, right? I mean, surveys said that, you know, Clinton was going to win the election too. So at the end of the day, you know, it's still, we're not talking like it's 48 to 52. Like, you know, this is a huge gap. 55% say definitely would not support that. 20 probably not. And then the definitely is 14% and 10% probably. So between the I probably would and I definitely would, as you said, 24%.
Yeah. And as you pointed out, I mean, this looking at the, you know, this was a poll done by Dan Jones and Associates. And you mentioned, you know, margin of error and everything. I mean, it sounds like a legit, you know, poll. 818 Utahns responding. So, that's I just frankly I saw that and I was really surprised. I mean, if you had asked me how many of you know what percentage of Utahns support just you know constitutional or common sense carry, I might have suggested half. I might have even thought 55% might support it. To be honest with you, like I'm just
yeah
like this it went completely the opposite way from what I would expect completely.
Yeah, I consider that in the state of Utah currently, a person can open carry essentially a loaded gun. Now, I have to be careful because Utah has a very specific definition of the word loaded and unloaded. Mm-hmm. So in Utah, the law currently permits that a person without a permit can walk around on the in a public place with a firearm open, not concealed, with a full mag and no safety on. So essentially, they just need to rack a slide. You know, they just need a chamber round, and that's considered unloaded and thus legal. So I think you know the general arguments that have been made in years past when this legislation has been proposed is you know essentially what we're trying to do is allow what is currently being done to take that individual and just let them put a jacket over their gun. Like,
right.
You know, they already walk around with it. The status is the same. Like we just want them to be able to cover it up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Utah is an interesting place because there's not necessarily a lot of states that, you know, have restrictions on how you carry a gun when you carry openly, even when a permit is not required. And Utah is so interesting in that they do not allow a round to be chambered in the gun. And in the case of a revolver, clarification from the Attorney General's office is that if it's a 5-shot, you can only have 3 rounds in it. And if it's a 6-shot, you can only have 4 rounds. And one of those empty chambers has to be the empty chamber that the hammer is down on current, you know, and then the next, if I remember correctly, wasn't also the next chamber can't be loaded or something like that?
It's 2 mechanical moments and no round in the firing position, right? That's the definition of unloaded. Now to clarify for those of you who may be concerned or think that we're crazy, we're talking about, you know, your ability to carry an open carry gun without a permit.
Right.
Without a permit. Now, if you have a permit, then it doesn't really matter. You can, you know, have one in the chamber and all that jazz and it's all good. But we're talking about permitless open carry.
Yeah. It's just really interesting. But so, you know, we know that Representative Perry is going to introduce this common sense carry bill, as he calls it, yet again, that he's done in years past. And it sounds like it's probably not going to go anywhere, mostly because, if anything, state legislators definitely have an out because they can simply point at, look, our constituents don't want it. And they got a case for that.
Yeah, and even if it passes, which it has in years past, gone through the legislature, it's been vetoed more than once now by governor.
So, Republican governor.
Yeah, yeah. So I would suggest that, you know, it doesn't really sound like it's going to get through one way or the other.
Mm. So very interesting. Well, so we've seen recently, like last year, Idaho, my own home state, you know, passed constitutional carry, which is the northern neighbor of Utah, but doesn't look like we're going to see that happen anytime soon in Utah. Moving on to a story from guns.com. This I love gun buyback programs. So San Jose PD recently had a gun buyback event. And this story tells us that nearly 700 guns were turned into the police department during this buyback event, which broke their previous record of 450. So if individuals wanted to do so, they could bring unwanted firearms to the event and with no questions asked. You know, no background check, no ID, anything. Just bring a gun. And if you handed a gun over to the police, you were given Target gift cards. $100 for handguns, rifles, and shotguns. No, and regardless of the value, apparently. But AR-style rifles would yield a $200 gift card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these. I think last time we talked about this, we had a couple of really good laughs because obviously this is a great place to buy guns. Unfortunately, in San Jose, it'd be very difficult to stand across the street from this buyback and stop people and be like, "Hey, I'll just buy it from you for more," because the nature of San Jose, California, the laws that would regulate that. So I didn't see anything in the news story that suggested that there were any buyers there, you know, trying to take people out of line and outbid the buyback, which is common in a lot of these programs. But a couple of things I thought were interesting or noteworthy. Of the, whatever it is, 690 guns collected, 272 handguns, 410 long guns, and 8, and they put it in quotes, assault, end quote, rifles. And the other thing I thought was really interesting is that the first person in line at the buyback turned in 45 handguns. That's crazy. One person. It's like, where did they get all these? And the other thing that was kind of interesting or noteworthy is that only one of the guns that was turned in the buyback had been previously reported stolen. And so that would be returned to its owner. The other 689 guns, I guess, will be destroyed.
That's interesting and kind of surprising to an extent. Now, I suspect, much like many other gun buyback programs that have been done elsewhere, that many of these guns that are turned in were kind of junk guns. I'm sure there's exceptions, right? But you can kind of see this image here, and you see these barrels that have long guns, and they're labeled long guns. And, you know, I could definitely see that there's some surplus, you know, rifles and whatnot in there. So, you know, at least people have some semblance of common sense as far as like they're not going to go hand over their, you know, $2,000 Colt 1911.
Right.
For a $100 gift card.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting. I would just add, like, an interesting thing about these programs is I'm always interested where they get the funds for these. In this case, it's Target. I mean, Target donated these gift cards. And we've talked about Target back in episode 7 just briefly. Target would really, really rather people didn't bring guns into their stores. I think that's how their policy is kind of worded. But they don't have an official policy against guns. So, yeah, in this case, Target said that they would fund this. But they ran out of all the Target gift cards, and they ended up giving people cash. And the cash apparently came from donations made to the San Jose Police Foundation and from other asset forfeiture funds.
Interesting. Now, there is something here I'd like to quote from the article before we move on that, you know, kind of drew my eye. And it has to do with the San Jose Police Chief Eddie Garcia, who made a comment on Twitter that I think is kind of ridiculous a little bit, but this is what he says. He tweeted on there, over 500 guns so far. We can debate all you want, but that's 500 guns not being stolen in burglaries. And I'm thinking, that's a bunch of bull. You know, like, I mean, okay, so you did a buyback program and you're saying one of the big reasons or motivations behind that, and then they say so right here in another statement, that it's, you know, that they'd like to help combat violence against our police officers to stolen firearms from residential burglaries. And, you know, and they do recognize this is a small effort to, you know, combat those issues, but that it is just that, a very small effort.
I mean, what they're suggesting is two things. One, that all these guns that they got in the buyback would have been easily stolen.
Right.
And or they're suggesting that all guns are easily stolen. I mean, that the only way to prevent burglaries of guns is to get rid of all guns. I mean, it's essentially exactly. Like a confiscation or elimination scheme.
Yeah, it's terrible logic, you know,
and a bad strategy.
Yeah, indeed.
If that's your game plan, like, I'm really worried about where you're going.
Indeed. So, you know, folks, keep your guns in the safes and, you know, everything's good. All righty. Next story. This one actually comes from KPLR News 11, St. Louis, Missouri. And it highlights how women are propelling gun sales to all-time highs. Is anybody surprised by this? I know I'm not.
Well, I'll just quickly interject before you get into the details. I have seen endless news stories over the last 2 years about how women are driving the industry, but none of them have any data ever.
Right.
Like, it's all anecdotal. I've yet to see, every time one of these headlines pops up in one of my emails or in our podcast list or that our research team sends to us, I'm always like, oh, sweet, finally, someone's got me some info. And I read through it, and it's always some interview from some dude who teaches classes or owns a gun store who says, yeah, we've been getting a lot more women around here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. It is something that's difficult to actually measure because,
sure,
you know, on the form 4473, you know, that's used for background checks on firearm purchases, it doesn't, well, I guess it does. It does ask on their male or female, doesn't it?
Now that it I does.
Think about it.
Yeah,
I was going to say so. It doesn't, but actually now that I think about it again, it does. But I don't think
Google
that's
it.
Something
yeah,
that,
sure.
No, I'm pretty sure it does. But I don't think that's something that the, you know, ATF or state agencies are really keeping tabs on. Because I don't, yeah, you know, that's a good question. I'm going to have to, we should look into that a little bit deeper, Jacob. That would be an interesting thing to look into to see if we can actually.
Should. Yeah, that would be
You know, maybe somebody could file like a FOIA, you know, a Freedom of Information Act request to ATF saying we'd like stats on, you know, gun purchases in the last year by females compared to males or something.
We would need it for like the last 10 years
in order to
draw some sort of trend.
Right, know? Right. Thanks for
so. It, needless to say, I kind of concur. I agree that I see more women, you know, in the game than I ever have before. But
yeah.
I always try and be a data-minded person.
Yeah, and you are indeed, knowing you personally. So, you know, just looking at this, you know, article, it talks about how nearly 25 million background checks will have been completed by year's end for this year, and this is actually coming from the FBI. So, I mean, here is a statistic for you, Jacob, but it doesn't tell us. In those 25 million background checks, how many of those were women?
Right, but it's not helpful at all.
But we do see, you know, owners of shooting and firearm sales stores and other groups, trainers. I mean, myself even, like, compared to, you know, 5 years ago, you know, doing CCW or other firearms classes compared to now. I mean, 5 years ago, it would have been a shock if you ever even suggested that I would ever teach a class that had more women than men in my class. But that actually happens somewhat frequently now. Like, I'll bet I've had a handful of classes where the women outnumbered the men. And that is, you know, so anecdotally, you know, I know it's not numbers for you, Jacob, but anecdotally, I do really truly believe that women are having a huge impact in the industry right now. So,
and so do I. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's interesting to note. Now, in a related story, and Jacob, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit in our you know, outline because it's completely related to this, and that is the story on the truthaboutguns.com site. The title is Breaking. It's official. 2016, biggest year for gun sales ever. So since we were just talking about that, and they even say right here how the FBI released their numbers from the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, that for November and for the year 2016, that 2016 is, they call, the year of the gun, with 24.8 million guns sold. The previous best was the year 2015, and this year alone beat 2015 by over 1.5 million guns. That's really impressive.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then so the point is that we've already topped 2015, the previous best year for gun sales by 1.5 million, and we're just in November, or we were just in November. And so throughout the month of December, this number is going to get even bigger. So that's really impressive. So mm-hmm. Cool. Good for us and good for you, folks. I'm sure a number of our listeners have bought new guns. Now, on to our next story. And this is actually on concealednation.com. And
.org.
Or thanks for the correction. And it says Ohio looks to reduce penalty for carrying firearm on campus, allow colleges to let students carry. And this is fantastic. And actually, this was mentioned to me, and he kind of talked about it, I think, a little bit last week. Yeah, Matthew Marister in the podcast, who is a firearms instructor in Columbus, Ohio, and which is where Ohio State's located. Where we know we had that recent vehicle and stabbing event take place. And he had mentioned to me how they're looking at basically allowing colleges to or students to carry on campuses.
Yeah, you know, this is interesting because obviously we have actually a really good map on our website. I should put the link or put the map in the show notes. But we have a lot of different varying methodologies in this country. You know, we have states, you know, only three of them, as it were, that just explicitly allow concealed guns on in college campuses. Then we have the states that are, I think, what this Ohio model would be, which is, you know, guns are allowed on college campuses. However, college campuses have some discretion about where they're not allowed or when they're not allowed, or, you know, things like that. Like kind of like the new Texas model of, okay, well, we have to allow it by law, but we can say you have to have a holster or you have to have retention or you can't have it in this one building for whatever reason. You have just obviously a blanket restriction states, which is Ohio is currently one of those. Like we just, the law says you can't have a gun on a college campus, period. Mm-hmm. And then you have states, and this actually represents a higher percentage than most might think, states where the law allows that the school decide. You know, California, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Virginia, West Virginia, Alabama, Indiana, Iowa, South Dakota, Montana, Washington, Maine, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Vermont, New Hampshire, Delaware, and Maryland. All of these are states that say, hey, if you know, the law has no blanket restriction, nor does it require that the school allow it, the school can decide. And you might imagine that in most of those states, all the schools decide no.
Right.
But it still goes a long way to creating some sort of opportunity. And then the last kind of model that we have in this country, there's a handful of states, North Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Kentucky, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and Washington, D.C., that concealed guns are permitted in locked cars in the parking lots, but not in the school. So that's kind of the way that they've done that. But if I had to point at a state that I think has got something really smart going on, I think that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, it was Wisconsin. Remember the bill that some dude representative in Wisconsin is proposing that essentially it's like the lowest hanging fruit possible. I think it's like private schools can decide to allow guns or something like that. Like, you know, we're going to allow that private schools, if they want to, can allow guns on their campus. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just so like low barrier to entry. Like, how could you not get that passed? You know, because it just seems like so like, you know, just easy. And once that gets passed, then you can go further. Then you can say, okay, we've had a year go by. No one's died. You know, we have track record. Let's take this one step further. And so I hope Ohio doesn't go crazy and try and, you know, push through a law that's got so much jammed into it that no one will vote for it, and we're back to square zero. You got to make proposals that have a hope of chancing, a hope of passing.
Right, right. No, it's good thoughts, Jacob. And we did talk about that and how, you know, even though certainly we'd love to see things opened up even further in places like Wisconsin, we recognize, I mean, Wisconsin frankly, it tends to lean blue politically, you know, Democrat, more liberal, you know, I mean, like they've tipped, you know, Trump was an exception and it was fairly close. But my point is that, you know, it's not one of those states, it's not like Wyoming where you can just about propose any, or Idaho, you know, where you could just about propose any pro-gun law and expect it to pass. So, you know, they went for something that was more reasonable. And, you know, I know there's organizations, one in particular here in Colorado, that when legislators don't go, you know, all in on certain bills and laws, this organization totally freaks out and like actually will fight against these legislators. Even though they're trying to get some good done, they'll fight against them. Because yeah. It's not enough. You know, it's actually not enough. And
you'll be I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just was, you know, that's just my point though, is like I want, you know, more, but you gotta be reasonable. And give things a chance.
Yeah. And allow it to prove itself and then go get more.
Yeah.
You know, like allow there to be a track record. You'll actually be curious to know, by the way, that Wyoming did not pass a law recently for campus carry.
Well, yeah. Okay.
It was proposed and it did not.
Oh, and it did not. Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh.
Correct.
Interesting. Well, you know, but there's that kind of liberal side of the state, you know, that Jackson Hole place that's so beautiful but has a bunch
of...
Yeah,
like all 50 people there. Yeah.
Well, they're all hippies, though. No, I'm sorry, any Jackson Hole residents.
Jackson, in fact, they're going to be pissed. You're going to get hate mail because I've been to Jackson Hole, and they're not hippies.
Oh,
but wow. You've been to Jackson Hole.
I used to work there.
You're going to fight with me, but yeah. But it's my home state. So here's the thing: academia is liberal. That's the thing here. Is it's not. I mean, look at Texas. I mean, Texas is a pretty gun-loving place, but the world of academia is very liberal.
Yeah.
And so when you start touching on college campuses and universities with gun, it just changes the game.
Totally. And just so that it's clear for our listeners, just looking at the bill, and it's House Bill 48 in Ohio that is getting ready to propose this. The bill would allow for concealed carry in public areas of airports and police stations, because currently those are off limits, locked in a vehicle in a school safety zone, ability to carry into daycare centers, and allows universities to adopt policies on gun safety for their campuses, and reduces the charges to a misdemeanor for carrying onto campus. So this isn't an all out campus carry bill, but it is kind of like a step in the right direction, similar to the approach of Wisconsin. So it still keeps a lot of power in the university's hands as far as what their specific policies are for their campuses. But what it does change is that if you still choose to basically disregard the law and carry on to a campus, the worst you could be charged with is a misdemeanor. And that's better than, I guess, currently it must be a felony or something. So it's not saying that you can...
It's not...
Go ahead.
It's not clear to me if that's all that's going on here, because it says that the original House Bill 48 just sought to essentially, lessen Then it says, the penalty, thank you. Then it says, legislatures are now seeking to expand this measure in the wake of this attack, but it doesn't actually say what they're attempting to do.
Yeah.
So it's not entirely clear to me what exactly they're proposing.
Right, now. Right. And then that's a good point, because the recent Ohio State attack happened since this was initially, since they began working on this bill. And so that is giving them perhaps some cause to rethink and like you said, expand, students' abilities and capabilities, on their campuses. So certainly we'd like to see that. I mean, we know there are people that are willing to lay it out on the line, and to fight back and defend themselves and their fellow students. I mean, look at this. What was it in Oregon or Washington a couple years ago, right? That community college or something where that guy came with a shotgun and started shooting, right? And the guy, the hero, stepped in and all he had was pepper spray, And he stepped in, sprayed him with pepper spray, and then tackled him and wrestled the gun away from him. Can you imagine? I mean, did he successfully stop that attack? Yeah, he did. But he was also very lucky, because the consequence, if anyone, anything had gone wrong in his counterattack, he's catching a 12-gauge slug or 12-gauge buckshot, and he's dead. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if, students in a situation like that, instead of being, having to resort to just hands-on or maybe some pepper spray, there would be no question. If you got somebody that comes on campus intent on killing and seriously hurting people, you're going to draw a gun. You're going to fire it. And that is always a better solution for putting, or stopping these attackers in their tracks, dead in their tracks. So we'll see what happens, and we'll keep you up to date, listeners, as to this legislation out of Ohio as it goes through this process. On to now New Jersey. And this is a little bit of good news, and this is featured on the NRA's site on the Institute for Legislative Action, so the NRA ILA, and they reported that in New Jersey, anti-shooting range legislation, so there's some legislation that was anti-shooting range, made it more difficult for shooting ranges. It was pulled from a committee agenda. Assemblyman Ralph Caputo, a Democrat assemblyman there in New Jersey, had proposed a couple of bills which would have required target shooters to produce a state-issued ID along with a firearm identification card or a firearm owner's identification, something similar to the Illinois FOID card. It's an FID card, or at least a purchase permit before using the range. And so, yeah, I mean, it would have been a discouragement to, you know, I mean, you, we know the types of folks that we gun people are. We don't like having to produce an ID, you know, by law, to go shooting someplace. And that's what this was basically going to require, as well as identification that basically you are allowed to actually own or possess the gun that you brought with you to shoot. And so fortunately, this has been tabled. They are not moving forward with this legislation. So good for you, New Jersey. New Jerseyans. Is that how you say it? New Jerseyans?
That sounds good. Sure. I mean, it's been a long time since we saw any good news out of New
Jersey.
That
is so true. So, good stuff to hear about there. I mean, certainly New Jersey has a lot of work ahead as far as pro-gun type stuff, but that's at least a good thing there, mm-hmm. Good sign. On to Washington, and this is our first justified story. Culpeper County.
Oh, you skipped one, right?
Did I? What did I skip?
Levi.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks for... Oh, you are so right, sir. Thank you. That was at the end of my list of tabs here. So why don't you enlighten the listeners on this news story? And I did kind of touch on it a little bit in the introduction of the podcast today.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know how to pronounce this dude's name. I'm going to assume that it is Chip Berg.
Yeah, it's just Berg.
B-E-R-G-H. Mm-hmm. Berg? Okay, sure. So Chip Berg is the CEO of Levi Strauss. So this guy, you know, he's the big jefe in charge of this company. And, you know, not too long ago, was it like a week or two ago, a few weeks ago, in Georgia, a man, a customer is in the store and he's carrying his handgun and he accidentally shoots himself. And frankly, like, I didn't do any research, but I doubt it's the first time someone has been in a changing room and accidentally shot themselves, because it's a vulnerable time, right? Like you're taking clothes on and off. A person, if you're not doing that well or properly, you know, maybe you don't keep your gun in your holster or something falls or, you know, whatever. So I'm just inclined to say, yeah, come on, guys, we should be better than this. But regardless, this led to put some pressure on the CEO of Levi Company, because I think that the sense was, you know, employees are like, hey, what do we do in these situations where people come in with guns? And it kind of led to some more gun demonstration type things in some of their stores. So the CEO issues a statement, and essentially the gist of the statement is, don't bring guns in our stores. And, you know, we really, you know, it's a little bit short of an outright ban. It's very like Starbucks style. And it even says that they consulted with Starbucks about how Starbucks did their statement. But it's very Starbucks style. It's like, we don't want to be in this debate. Please don't bring guns in. But if you bring a gun in, you know, we're not going to approach you and tell you to leave. Like, we're not going to make our employees do that. So pretty interesting. But I think the most interesting thing about this whole story is a little bit more, you know, a specific detail about the CEO's background.
Yeah. And this was a little bit of a surprising bit of information about him. That 59-year-old Chip Berg is a former U.S. Army captain. And not only that, but he is also not a gun owner. So
yeah, that's awkward. Yeah,
so you're one of those kind of veterans, huh? I mean, I honor all veterans, but... you guys, particularly those of you veterans, you gun-loving veterans, you know the type of veterans I'm talking about. Anyway, so that's interesting. You know, I mean, this is, I mean, it's not like he's an Air Force, not to pick on the Air Force folks. It's not like he's an Air Force veteran. He's a U.S. Army veteran. He must have been working in admin or something. He wasn't an infantryman, is my guess.
Yeah, anyway, it's weird, right? Any veteran should have an appreciation for the fact that it takes a gun to do certain things in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly that a gun is merely a tool in hands of hopefully qualified individuals. And so, you know, and he said in his statement, he says, hey, you know, look, with stores, we have stores in Paris, France, in Nice, France, Orlando, Florida, you know, with the things that have happened there, the company's European headquarters is in Brussels, which is where that, I think that was a bombing that took place there. I've thought more about safety in the past year, he says, than in the previous three decades of my career because of how, quote, he puts in kind of air quotes, close to home, so many incidents with guns have come to impacting people working for this company. Now, I understand that, and I respect that to a degree. And certainly, is it Levi's right to, you know, say we don't want guns in our stores? Yeah, sure. It's private property. By all means, it's your right. Exercise your right. But just know that, you know, it's an affront in the face of law-abiding, responsible gun owners like ourselves. And we don't take to that very kindly. Now, he said he consulted with Starbucks, you know, before he crafted his own letter here, because Starbucks, you know, a couple of years ago did a similar thing. They didn't, you know, come outright and say, no more guns, period. But they kind of wrote a letter that was like, you know, we'd really appreciate it if you didn't, you know, do these open carry demonstrations, showing up with your AR slung across your back and walk into our store sort of thing. And, you know, they got a lot of hate mail over that and people threatening boycotts and so forth. And actually, it was funny because Starbucks got in a little bit of a lose-lose sort of situation where it was like, you know, because they had, you know, non-gun owners or gun supporters. They had non-gun supporters, you know, saying, you're not going far enough, so we're going to boycott you. And they had gun supporters saying, this is ridiculous, you know, for you to do this, so we're boycotting you. And so they were in a little bit of, I mean, I think the point to derive from this is businesses don't get involved in political issues if you don't want to have political issues, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Like it's a really easy thing policy to write. The policy is we abide by local laws.
Yep.
Like it's really easy. And that just works.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives you an out no matter, you know, what audience you're talking to. And you know, so well, because it really turns the focus to where laws, you know, where they happen, okay, and where these types of policies derive from. And so, you know, if you've got people that want more gun control or don't want guns in your establishment and you say, hey, we just abide by local laws, well, then they know they need to turn to their local lawmakers to have laws changed. It's pretty much what it comes down to. So the thing that was interesting here is that, so Chip Berg consulted with Starbucks, you know, hey, give me some tips here. And he felt like, you know, most likely any boycott threats would ultimately blow over. But, you know, here's the thing. People really like their coffee. And Starbucks is so darn, you know, convenient. And, but when it comes to something like pants, and you guys know what I'm talking about when I, you know, men are passionate about their pants. And, you know, at one time I was a passionate Levi wearer. I used to, you know, I mean, that was my blue jean of choice, but it's been years since I've worn Levi's and since I've given them any of my money. And that's because I found there were other options out there that were, sorry to say it, way better. And the thing is coffee is coffee, but when you find something as far as pants, that's better, you tend not to go back. So, folks, if you want to make your voices known on this, and I'm not one that usually gets on the whole, like, let's boycott bandwagon, but you know what? There are some, frankly, better pants out there, especially if you're a concealed carrier. I'm wearing some right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. So now on to the story out of Culpeper County, Washington. And so, you know, as is so common with these justified stories, we have a home invasion. And as is so often in these stories, you have someone trying to come into somebody else's house when they're not supposed to, and that someone gets themselves shot by the homeowner.
Yeah, but in this case, though, by their own gun.
Yeah, and we featured a couple of stories like that too, right?
Yeah, these are always fun, aren't they?
Go ahead and take it.
So two suspects knock on a door of a home, and when the homeowner answers the door, they say that they need help with their car. Now, the homeowner refuses, says, "Nah, sorry, can't help you," and tries to shut the door, and that's when these two people force their way in the house, and one of them strikes the homeowner with their gun. Well, apparently that didn't go over very well for the homeowner. He didn't like that. So he wrestles and struggles with the gun-wielding home intruder. And at some point, I don't know if he gained full control, but it says that the weapon was fired at one of the intruders, hit him in the stomach, and he later died.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. He kind of got what he had coming. Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting one. Most of the time with these stories, when there's an accomplice, the accomplice runs, like abandons their now bleeding friend and gets caught later. But in this case, the accomplice was arrested right there on the scene at the house. So I don't know if the gun owner held him at gunpoint, or if he just really didn't want to leave his bleeding friend on the ground. I don't know.
Right. And I think that bleeding or the accomplice that stayed, I think was a female, because it identifies them here as 21-year-old Delonte Jones, who is the man that was shot and killed by his own gun. And then the person arrested was 18-year-old Amber Ely. So, interesting. Fair it could have been one of those, boyfriend, girlfriend, and she couldn't leave her her loved one. I don't know. I don't mean to make light or laugh, but you know what? I mean, what do you expect? You show up at somebody's house to try to do them harm and take advantage of them, and you have a gun, and, although that I just had a thought, Jacob. So often you hear these stories, right, or these the argument made that, well, you're more likely to get, shot if you have a gun in the home, or, like the point we brought up that, hey, if you're carrying a gun, well, that's just going to get taken from you, and you'll be shot with your own gun. Well, that's certainly possible. We know it because we see these stories like this where the bad guys sometimes have their guns taken from them and then used on them. So, it just goes to show that it's really important, folks, that you train to use your guns effectively and also train to retain those weapons, and which has a lot to do, really, with just proper, if you're going to actually use a gun or go for your gun, you better do with full commitment for it. You're getting a firm, solid grip on it. Two-handed grip, would be ideal. And that you're committing and following through with actually using that. Because if you draw and commit to use that gun immediately, there's really not much of a chance for it to be used against you. And also, use good quality holsters to keep it retained when it's being carried on you. So, now, on to back to guns.com, where they reported a story about a Tennessee gun owner who shot a knife-wielding robber. And this did not occur in a home. It occurred at a convenience store, at a gas station. And so what happened here was you had an armed robber, okay? And this was Anthony Edmonds, who is age 53, who entered the store just before 2 a.m. on June 30th. Now, this is actually a little while ago, but what we're reporting and why this is news today is that now it's come out that there will be no charges for the man that shot the robber. And so good for him. But anyway, this suspect, Anthony Edmonds, approached the store clerk. He was wearing a ski mask and carrying a large butcher knife. He demanded cash from the register and stole a cigarette rack. It must have been a small rack. And after he got, it was a female clerk. She handed him some cash. He took the cigarette rack, and while threatening to kill her, he led her outside of the store. Well, it was then outside that Charles Russell, 33, pulled into the parking lot and realized what was going on. He was legally armed, carrying his gun. He pulled his gun and shot Edmonds a single time in the torso. And when police arrived, he was he was lying on the ground, but he later was transported to the hospital where he died. So after now they've done their full investigation and review of the situation, district attorney has determined that Russell's use of deadly force was completely justified. So, it's like I said, I'm good for him. Did he have to involve himself in the situation? No, he didn't have to, but he did the thing that I think a lot of people are willing to do when they see, a situation like this going down. And he is fortunate, though, that, he's not seeing charges, because, there's times people involve themselves in third party situations and they make a mistake. So now the one thing that was interesting that Mr. Russell, Charles Russell, he quotes him here as saying, this is an experience I don't wish on anybody. And that if I was, let's see, everybody has things that they say. If I was in this position, I would do this. I would do that. But until you are actually faced in a situation like that, you really can't say what you would do. There's a lot of truth in his statement right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it's always nice to hear it straight from the horse's mouth in this case, you know, I mean, because I've not been in a situation like that, neither have you, Jacob. And you know, we talk about all these theories and what we would do and what we wouldn't do. And like that man said, who has experienced it, you don't know until you actually live it. There's a lot of truth to that. Anyway.
Absolutely.
So let's get on to our final story here, which comes to us from CBS12.com, which is the CBS news station affiliate in Miami, Florida, where an intruder was shot and wounded by a Miami homeowner. And authorities say, and authorities say a man was forcing his way into a South Florida home, and he is in critical condition right now after the homeowner shot him. So around 5:20 a.m. Tuesday, it says that he began trying to force his way into the home, and that's when he was shot. And inside the home was a man, a woman, and two children. So, you know, a family. And I mean, that could be you, yep. Jacob. You and your wife, and you got two kids.
Yep, absolutely. Not a lot of details here, but some important ones that were included, like the fact that there was a man, women, and two children, and you know, very clearly began forcing his way inside. Yep.
And so, what do you expect? You know,
yeah. I did think an interesting note here would just be time of day. We see a lot of stuff late night, a lot of stuff 1 a.m. This was 5:20 a.m. Tuesday. It's not very often we see criminals that are up and about at 5:20 a.m.
So true. It is a little bit outside the norm. I think we already just shared one today that was what, like 2 a.m. something like that. Mm-hmm. You're totally right. I mean, from basically, you know, dusk to probably 3 a.m. is probably when most things occur. And 5:20, almost everybody's asleep. I'll tell you, I am dead asleep at 5:20. You know, I'm like, I might be up at 6, but 5:20, I am dead asleep. But you know what military strategy would suggest? You attack your enemy. if you're going to attack them in the dark, you know, if you're trying to catch them off guard, you do it at like, you know, you don't do it at 2 a.m. You do it at like 4 a.m. or 5 a.m.
Fair. So true.
Maybe that was the strategy here with this intruder. It obviously still failed. So, oh, man. You know, it's interesting because I was this story is a very simple story, but it did kind of jump out at me because I actually thought I heard a noise at my front door really, really early this morning. Ironically enough. And so this actually did kind of connect with me a little bit because this morning, and I can't remember exactly what time it was, but I know it was probably somewhere between 4 and 5:30 in the morning because that was just a feeling, you know how you can kind of tell, right? You know? And I remember thinking I heard something, you know, messing with the handle of my door. And I just kind of, you know, I came to a little bit and just listened. And, you know, nothing further. And I did actually kind of jump up and peek out the window, didn't see anything, and just went back to sleep. Well, I still laid awake for probably about, you know, 10 minutes and just listened. So, you know, I mean, it pays to be aware, you know, which can be a challenge when you're dead asleep. But for whatever reason, something startled me awake this morning. Ugh, hate to think if there was something out there.
Me too, but I'm glad you got an early start to the day.
Well, no, I went back to sleep. anyway, so today's episode is brought to you by the Mantis X. This clever firearm training device mounts to any handgun rail and reports back to your phone live shooting diagnostics data. Just download the free app to your phone and purchase the rail attachment from our store, and you will see fast improvements in your grip, trigger control, and recoil management. Go and check it out. Visit usafirearmtraining.com/shop, and you'll see there in our online store the Mantis X. That is MANTIS X. This is really the description there, Jacob, says it all. Clever firearm training device. If it's not clear to folks, it basically tracks the minute movements of your gun in the moments leading up to and just after you fire that gun. And so you can actually get real data that, oh, right before my trigger went bang or click and then bang, you know, like right before the trigger and the gun went off, my hands, you know, did this. You know, moved in this way, moved in this direction, you know, indicating that I anticipated the recoil and stuff like that. So really, really, really cool diagnostic. It's like having a firearms instructor in the palm of your hand, except mounted to the rail of your gun. So really interesting device. And we really saw it clever. At SHOT Show last year for the first time and just started selling them not too long ago.
Yep. Worth checking out. I think you'll be really impressed. And the nice thing, too, is you can buy one. You can put on all your guns or your friend's guns. So you can all kind of share in that data for a while until your friends start to borrow it too often, then make them buy their own.
So true. So true. So, you know, something we haven't done in a while, Jacob, is give a little shout out to folks that have left us a review on the podcast. And I thought I would, it's like I said, it's been a while, and I thought I would give somebody a little love today, a little podcast review love. So we just recently had a review left by Diablo Kitsu. This looks like a Japanese word here, which, you know, I speak Japanese. So if it is in fact Japanese, Diablo is not Japanese, but Kitsune. Kitsune. Now, we've seen some crazy names from people's reviews, but that's what it looks like to me. Which Kitsune, I think, is fox or something in Japanese. So, who knows?
No idea.
Diablo Fox. Diablo Kitsune. It says, mind-blowing podcast. I love it. Thank you.
We blew his mind.
Yeah.
All right.
We frequently blow our own minds in this podcast. And he says, I found this podcast a little over a week ago. I've been addicted ever since, already 50 plus episodes in. Holy cow, dude.
Wow, yeah, he's
yeah,
really
fast. Yeah, you got about 25 more to go. Jacob and Riley plus guests have such a great back and forth and really have such accurate and detailed conversation. And I love that at least one of them will be the devil's advocate or bring up the other side and give such a thorough discussion on everything talked about on this podcast. And he says a few other things there, but that's all the time we have for today. And so thank you, Diablo Kitsune. Really appreciate the feedback. And thank you for being a listener. And then he does say at the end, keep on rock the podcast, Jacob and Riley, and we got your six. So
all right.
I'm glad to know that folks have our six. Just know if I ever found out who you are, I would have your six as well.
There
so,
you go.
And we have a lot of dedicated listeners of the podcast, and we truly do appreciate it, and we thank you for it. The rest of you that are not quite to that level yet, that's okay. Now's your opportunity to go and subscribe now to the podcast. And you can do that by going to usafirearmtraining.com/subscribe-to-podcast. Subscribe-to-podcast. So that there will be some instructions there as to how to actually get subscribed so you don't miss a single episode and you're automatically either notified or you receive the podcast downloaded automatically to your mobile device. We hope that you will do that. Thanks again so much, everybody. We're going to bid you farewell now, Jacob.
Hasta la vista, team. Stay vigilant. Like I think I said this last week, but the holidays see higher crime rates. They see higher in-home accidents, higher deaths and fatalities. So be careful.
So true. And Jacob, you would know. You staying on top of the statistics sort of, guy you. So indeed, folks.
I'm a geek for the data.
So be safe out there. Train hard, train well, and be good citizens. We'll see you on our Wednesday episode, which, by the way, we're going to be talking about something interesting that sometimes has a lot of debate around it, and that is about appendix carry. So stay tuned. We'll see you Wednesday. Take care.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.